Welcome to the On Point podcast. This week, Rod Milosevic is speaking to Craig Chandler. He's a project manager of a job at St. Mary's Church in Marylebone for Sir Robert McAlpine. A unique job for us, where we used gaming designers to create an interactive 3D environment.
Hi, Rod.
Hello, Craig. Good to see you.
Yeah, and you. Yeah. And you. How have you been? Long time?
Very good. It's nice to be back in this building.
Yeah.
It's big memories.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Have you seen it since?
I've been back, yeah. So this, yeah, I'm part of a, it's an ongoing sort of process that we're nearly finished with the end of defects. So this is sort of the culmination really of, yeah. of the project really. And we're at that sort of point in the project cycle where we're 12 months after finishing, and they've effectively the doors have performed brilliantly. There's been no issues, and
that's great.
Everybody that comes through, obviously they are a real centerpiece of the vestibules.
I think the architects actually, thinking about now, the colour schemes and everything they've got blended really well. I mean, it's quite an aesthetic Carra architecture. Yeah, I remember when they got us in and we'd talked about all the different design features, but now seeing it in its glory, that's really good.
I've got to say, that's the thing that I probably, and without sounding too pretentious about it, I love the sort of the aesthetic of them, how empathetic they are to the architecture, to the sort of the history of the building. It's just they just sit brilliantly in the space, I think.
It's always difficult, isn't it? So when you, especially an old building like this, how old is it?
150.
150 years old, and then you sort of bring in something modern, but actually it blends really well. Obviously function. I mean, I've been a few times and I've seen like when the children are coming into the church. I mean, that's an amazing church. I think at some point get some shots of that, because it's a real centerpiece in London, I think.
Definitely.
I noticed on the doors that are in here, they've actually, which I haven't seen in a long time, people been commending the project team.
Yeah, effectively that is it. It's basically everybody that was on the ground involved in the project. Because obviously there's, I think what's forgotten, a project sort of done and wrapped up.
Yeah.
And you forget about all of those operatives and sort of the staff that were involved. And obviously you played a big part in this, because you were the sort of the entrance to the church.
I remember working on this, and even like the staircase and stuff like that. It was quite. That's all been refurbished now, isn't it?
Yeah, so effectively both vestibules and then the central narthex they've been restored.
Yeah.
Trying to sort of be sympathetic, like I said, to the architecture, and the doors just sit nicely in there. I think there were challenges along the way, things like sort of the undulations in the finished floor level, that type of thing. Yeah. But I think your guys did a fantastic job to.
Because you don't read it straight away.
No, you don't.
There's always got that curve thing, and then that's matched in, and because of the automation that's gone up there, because they're a quite tall door.
They are, yeah.
Which is a challenge in itself because of all the sensors and everything that work here. But I remember what we did sort of slightly different to this, and it was the first time that we sort of tried it, is, and I know you've done some stuff on point cloud.
Yeah.
But we scanned this area because it was obviously there was nothing here. And what we wanted to do was we used Unreal Engine, plus we used LiDAR and point cloud. And we actually built this, and we've got scans of this built before it was built.
Right, okay.
And so we had a robot that would come up and would test the sensors. And the reason we did that was because we wanted the install team to have an insight of what the architect wanted, how it's going to fit into the space, and also niggle out any, you know, find out any problems well ahead of time, which we did. So it was the first time we'd actually used it as a piece to train the operatives before, work out some design issues, so we could sort of collaborate with our own design team, you know, because they were working from home, or if we were in a different part of the country. We never actually got to try that because it's quite fast moving with your own team. But I think going forward, we've trialed it since on other jobs, and it works.
On the back of this project?
On the back of this project, yeah. It was a first for us, and certainly something that we would use going forward.
I think what's quite interesting is, obviously, your Open Entrances involvement predated Sir Robert McAlpine's. So I think you had that collaboration period with Carrow Architecture to try and sort of obviously design a scheme that was sort of that ticked all of the boxes, I guess, from an architectural, from a usability, functionality. I think that's the key, isn't it? They are functional.
Yeah, I mean, I think even to the choice of colours and materials. I mean, they were very detailed. And rightly so, because I just think it's worked out really well. I mean, that the even what we did, going back to that sort of the digital piece, we would actually be able to model the bronze in the colour, so that we could share that with our supply team. So people that are doing the manufacture of the doors, even to the point of, I mean, we had some issues around the handles, so we made like 3D models off the LiDAR that we could then send out and say, this is how it needs to be, because of the tolerances of glass, it wasn't always exact. But that, in the end, we got that done quite well. So yeah, I mean, it was a sort of like a bit of a touchstone for us, because we went on, we've started to use it in facade inspections, we started to use geospatials, drones, a lot of LiDAR. And the share and collaborate, I think, is, people are talking about AI and machine learning. The share and collaborate, once you've got those assets, I mean, I think you've done a big piece here as well, haven't you?
Yeah, we did, at the start of the project, we did a point cloud, which has proved invaluable, really, from a defect sort of monitoring point of view, just to sort of really see the progress of the work. So it's invaluable. And I think in sort of modern construction, I think it's coming to the fore, it really is. Yes, so if you're happy, let's go and have a look at the
parts
of the church.
Yeah, I'd love to see what else.
They've just finished.
Oh, yeah. They had a beautiful piano tuner here earlier.
Yes. So I think they've just finished the apse, the sort of the... effectively, there was conservation work on the panel there.
That did you get involved in that?
We weren't involved in that. So effectively, our works stopped with the plaster ceiling. Mm-hmm. So in April 22, there was a crack appeared around sort of one of the ceiling roses.
Right.
And from there, that sort of kick-started a wholesale sort of scaffold in, survey, and then actually sort of wholesale repairs to the plaster ceiling. Mm. So this is the end result, really.
It's amazing. This is a whole different discussion, but I've been watching recently about, it's called Simonatics, and it's the resonance. And like even these sort of shapes like that, well, under vibration of sound, they create these sort of natural forming patterns, which when you look at churches and you look at temples all around the world, they find these organic patterns that appear as a result of sound.
Yeah, okay.
And it's like, really, it's quite fascinating. I was like, YouTube, last night, looking at it, thinking, wow, it's like, what?
Yeah, I'm not seeing that too much.
No.
In terms of the church, it used to have a second floor gallery.
Right.
That actually sort of, it went either side, it flanked either side of the aisles. That was taken away. I think structurally it wasn't, it wouldn't conform to modern regulations, that sort of thing. But
so do you know much about that? What would you call that, vestibule?
No, so that's the app. So effectively our works stopped. We worked externally, but our works sort of stopped at that line.
Okay.
It just didn't form part of the remit.
Right.
But everything else that you see has been lovingly restored.
Wow. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So is there a quiet part to this church?
We'll probably need to find find something. It's quite a busy day for them.
Yeah.
So let's go downstairs.
Yeah. It's been a while since we caught up. It must be a good year or something.
Yeah,
Over.
Yeah, absolutely. So the project finished in mid December,
2022. So yeah, I think you finished just before that, actually. So yeah, it was a fantastic project for all of us, really. So.
Yeah, no, it looks great. And we walked around and we captured some good shots and yeah, seen it in all its glory. But you know, as we sort of come, you know, this is obviously an original meeting room and stuff like that. What kind of memories do you have of the job?
Fond memories of obviously the sort of the work. I think from my side of things, being a construction project manager, you look for challenging projects, and this was certainly one of those. I think our biggest challenge was just keeping sort of the building operational, which we achieved. There's the added sort of challenge of the church has got it leases it's the basement to the health centre, so it's an NHS health centre. And at the time we started the project, it was the height of COVID. So we had to sort of maintain not only sort of the church from a spiritual point of view, but obviously sort of the health centre and their sort of their huge demand that was placed on them. So yeah, that was our biggest challenge. So
I hadn't realised that. Yeah. I didn't realise that was a thing. So, but I know they kept services.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going,
yeah.
Through the whole thing.
Yeah, we had a period. It was an unforeseen. There was an issue with the plaster ceiling, so that then evolved into sort of a wholesale repair scheme with an internal scaffold, a Burko scaffold. So that was the only sort of time when the church actually closed, was the bringing in of scaffold materials and then obviously sort of removing. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, it was fully operational throughout. So, and obviously you guys did play a big part in that, because we had to sequence your works to sort of accommodate the needs of the church. So I think it was a case of working on the west vestibule to allow then the central narthex and east vestibule to be operational, and then it was swapped around. So yeah, it was a challenging project.
Is this a sort of typical sort of McAlpine job, or?
No, it's not typical. I think working with an eminent design team like we did, and working on a challenging project which we did, I think that sort of ticks a lot of boxes. But I think if you ask anybody, SRM, obviously we've got a long history of complex engineering, and we had that to a degree, but it was just on a much smaller scale. So it was a micro project of what obviously what is SRM's bread and butter.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
because I know, yeah, and you do sort of big scale projects. I think you just finished a big hospital.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got obviously different divisions within the company, and obviously we have healthcare, which obviously in the last 5 years has really sort of taken off. So this project came out of the special projects division of SRM. So we're dealing with sort of the historical or architectural sort of significant buildings in and around London.
With the on point, the point is really potential opportunity impact needs effectively, and any transformation that's needed in the in industry, and obviously as a top tier one contractor, I imagine you have real insights. So where's the potential, I think, to really change the industry as it is?
I think this project sort of represents a really good example of that. I think where you've got obviously that sort of drive towards sort of costs and sustainability, and actually sort of we made it contemporary. It's from a aesthetic point of view as well as sort of a usability point of view, we've made it current, whereas and maintained that sort of that integrity of the building, really, which is great. It's I think the purpose of this project was to remove it from the at-risk register. So we looked at say it had a new roof and things like that, so we dealt with the fundamentals, but then also things like making the building much more sort of sustainable, and making it sort of so it's cutting down on costs, and actually sort of in the long term with things like your doors, you know, sort of it that being put into a seasonal mode, you know, things small changes like that.
So was the brief sort of like sustainability? Did you get to reuse any?
I think, to be honest, that's probably sort of a question you could answer, really, because I think from, like I said earlier, I think your involvement predates us, and I think you were part of that early discussions with Caro Architecture, yeah. Just in terms of what that remit looked like. Yeah. Obviously, we took it on, but actually sort of the early work, the groundwork was done by you guys, yeah, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it was great to work with Caro, and they had a vision of trying to make it as robust but as filigree as possible. The use of the material, so they blended in, trying to keep, as you say, you're working with, you know, historic building, but at the same time bringing, you know, we were using bronzes and as slim line as possible, but to be functional, because a lot of things we work on, you know, architects can go, yeah, and no, I want it to look no hands free, but then it's got to work. You know, there's an Absolutely. Awful lot yep. of traffic that goes through.
Yeah.
And you know, a year down the road, and we haven't had any call outs, which is great to
yeah.
hear.
Yeah, it's testament to the product. I yeah. think.
And I think their design, and you know, like just you know, we worked together. The teams work together because, you know, you've got undulating floors, you've got, you know, walls, there's curves. So to put something in so it doesn't look like it's a bolt-on, it's actually, it's been thought about and it's integrated well into an old building. But in terms of, you know, SRM find on doing a job like this? Would it lead to a potential, okay, we would do some more of this? Is this?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a lessons learned exercise. I think we would do things slightly differently, you know, how we approached it. It was set up in a really challenging time, sort of socially and obviously sort of economically.
Yeah.
So I think we weren't able to hit the ground running as much as we liked. I think our program from day one was basically sort of out of date because yeah. of yeah. the impacts sort of in society. But yeah, I think there's certainly a drive, particularly within SRM's special projects sort of division. This is our bread and butter. I mean, this is we're used to dealing with the big projects, but ultimately, like you apply the same principles to any size project, and that's effectively what we've done. We think we've given a good service here, and they've got a fantastic sort of building now.
Yeah. And opportunities wise, so encouraging other sort of smaller subcontractors. I mean, it was lovely to be sort of cited. You know, I could see a whole wall on the glass of other subcontractors and everyone who's involved in the project, which I think brings sort of like it's a nice warm feeling that you've been part of something. But what opportunities can you see for smaller subcontractors working with sort of like the tier one like yourself?
Yeah, I think it's a challenge for all of the supply chain. I think there's sort of we've got a trusted supply chain, but I think sometimes governance gets in the way of it prevents smaller sort of more niche contractors feeling that they can work with a tier one. But actually, sort of I think hopefully what this project does is just show that actually a tier one contractor can work quite effectively with a whole range of subcontractors and suppliers. Really, there's certainly opportunity. It's just we need to overcome that sort of that fear that a tier one contractor is looking to impose a whole host of constraints and restrictions. That's not the case.
No, it certainly wasn't with us. No. I mean, we had a really good experience, and it was guided well. You know, it felt very light touch, but you felt like, okay, you know, we were learning ourselves in the way that we were presenting information and running a project, you know, that we were upskilling as well.
Yeah, ultimately that is the point, isn't it? You guys are the experts. If we're doing our job properly, all we're there to do is facilitate you, and that's what hopefully we did.
On impact, and I'm talking about a global and outside of this job, you know, what are some of the impacts that, I mean, there's a lot of geopolitics that are going on, and you know, we've got inflation and stuff like that, but for building and construction, and with special projects, I imagine that you are working with older buildings, and certainly with us through the GA brand, we're working on buildings that are sort of 20, 25 years old. What are some of the impacts that you're seeing are, you know, that you are adding more risk or adding more concern in dealing with that?
Good question. Can I have a minute to think about it?
Phone a friend.
I didn't realise you would challenge me like this in
I'll be kind.
So the challenge or challenges.
For instance, if I give it with what we do, some of the challenges are, you know, if you work in the city and you need to change glass or you need to do a big refurbishment, the natural thing is let's scaffold it all up. But that's not business as usual.
No.
So we're having to really think about traffic management, working with the councils so that you only work. So we might only be able to work at weekends, for instance, because we can shut the roads down, but we only get a weekend. So it's a small window. So the program goes out, but you have to really work your efficiency. And I just sort of shoot it from here, but in when you're doing major construction, so like bricks and mortar and, you know, plastering and things like that, I imagine you have similar challenges?
Yeah, I think stakeholders generally, I think they all play a part, don't they? I think it's very difficult to keep everybody happy. That's a real challenge, and you're not gonna please everybody. I think for just taking this project as a prime example, we had the church and obviously sort of the congregation and visitors to think about. We then also had patients come into the surgery. We've got a school that sort of sits on the on the south side. It's got a busy sort of a busy road at the front of it. So you've got all of those challenges, and that's probably is particularly working in central London. I think logistics and keeping the peace amongst the chaos of central London, I think that's a real challenge.
Yeah, I mean, a good point, but how do you manage that? How big a team do you need for the comms and the project management?
I think it's having the right people that have the experience and sort of, I think, the confidence to actually sort of effectively manage these. And we have obviously sort of, you have management plans in place, but it's actually sort of, it's people that are able to react day to day and actually sort of see that we're ultimately all problem solvers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's just about having the right teams, actually sort of picking the right people for specific projects. I think that's key. And let's look at location, let's look at the type of work, and then sort of then deploy the right people to manage it.
Is there something new? Have you seen a new way of working that's making that easier? Or
I think as in my 20 plus years in the industry, I think the sort of the type of people that are coming into construction are different. I come from a creative sort of background. I did a sort of an art degree. I think you've got different types of people coming into the industry that are actually sort of making a difference. It's sort of you're losing some of that sort of old school, which there's not sort of, it's no, there's no slant on people that are born and bred into the industry, but you've got sort of people that have just got maybe a different view on things, a different way of approaching. I think that's just helping. It's just making the industry much more rounded, I think.
Do you think they're bringing more tech skills?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got sort of, look at yourselves, you know, you bring in sort of that sort of that technical side of things with the IT, sort of the point clouds and things like that we're talking about. And actually, sort of that is making a real difference to all of our lives on a project.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you know, people talk about digital twin, and there's you know, it's just a big, you know, people argue about what is a digital twin. You know, is a photograph a digital twin, or is it a point cloud, or is that, you know, does it have to be interoperable? That's one area that I'm fascinated in, and the more I spend on it and see the speed of expansion of thought, I mean, within 2 years, I mean, these things will be, everything will be teched. up. There'll be sensors. I mean, when we've never employed it or deployed it, but I actually bought a sensor for these doors.
Oh, really?
So I was going to, because we built up the point cloud model, that we could put sensor in that would feed the point cloud, and it would tell us how many times it went through.
Right.
It's like a nice sensor. From a maintenance point of view, if there was something in place, they could ring up and say, if there's something wrong with the doors, we could plug into the point cloud, look at what the sensor was telling us, and diagnose it. Because 90% of the time, it is literally just a reset.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, at Christmas time, people are saying, oh, the doors are not working. It's because someone's put a Christmas tree right by the door, and the lights are just like driving the sensors mad.
So that's data that's collected, is it? Is it? What happens to that data? Where does that?
The data is just collected, so it becomes useful information. I mean, we set up a whole division called FIMS, which is Facade Information Management System, which is a portal that collects data. So when we're doing these point clouds or walkthroughs or LIDARs, that you can tag in ONEMs, for instance. So we will do it on this one, where. Now it's sort of finished. We'll do a walkthrough, maybe even using the existing point cloud, and then we can put what materials. So visual O&M. So an engineer turns up, and he'll have that on an iPad, and he'll go, right, okay, what is this motor? What model? And it'll just be able to click and it'll bring it up. So there's no more looking in folders. More, you know, even online folders somewhere in a system, in a Teams folder that no one's updating. This will be something that gets updated. It's a visual O&M. Anyone can look at it. Me and you could go and pull up an iPad now, click it, and it will say, right, this is what was used. This is when it was last serviced. This is what the sensors are saying.
Right. Okay.
And I think that's the way that I think certainly from maintenance, because we do a lot with facilities management, it has to be just for speed. You know, everyone's economics says that everyone has to be efficient, and efficiency is sustainability.
Yeah,
because that's if I could resolve something online, I'm not sending an engineer in a van. Carbons and all the rest of the carbonomics makes sense. So are you, from a company point of view, I know we talked about sustainability, but is there a drive for carbonomics, and how are SRM dealing with?
Yeah, I think sort of it's interesting actually. I was just, as you were talking there, I was thinking about more and more clients that I'm working with, and obviously sort of in the wider sort of company, I think sort of having that granular level detail is becoming much more relevant. I think sort of having easy access to information. I've just, funny enough, for this project, I've one of the staff or my colleagues put together the O&M, and I think it sort of totaled 20 odd lever arch files. You know, nobody wants that. You want the sort of extensive amount of information, but you want it at sort of the touch of a button. It's just, that's the way that the world is going. And I think it goes back to sort of that earlier point, that the people coming into the industry, the people that are much more sort of tech savvy than others, they bring that dimension actually, and that's only gonna evolve and improve. And I think that's it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I think what are the things we're all facing? XR, augmented reality, virtual, digital twin. I mean, it's just becoming like even 18 months ago, it was people think, oh no, it's almost. But now if we had glasses or using age, we'd know what that paint color is. We'd know where that wood was sourced for. And I think that's, we've done that on a recent job we did at the Scape, where we've loaded everything in. Because, things get scratched. So let's say, for instance, those bronze got damaged. You'd want to know exactly what that color was, rather than hunting down through your 15
absolutely.
Folders.
Yeah.
So, and it allows you, if it was something that had to be an emergency change and we couldn't get there, you could just say, oh, I know what that glass is and I know where it came from, and I could just repeat. So I think that's the thing from a facilities and a sort of sustainable piece. It's a small piece, but I think that really helps going forward.
But I don't know about you. I just remember going to a lecture 15 years ago, and they were talking, they presented something on BIM, and I just sort of, at the time, yeah. I remember being sort of thinking of it, being such a skeptic about it, that it's a yeah. fad and it's not going to last, you know, sort of nothing can replace sort of a paper and pen drawing, you know, it's just things like that. It's just in my short time, and I count 20 years as being sort of not an awful lot of time in the industry, but I've seen that sort of that change, and it's positive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't beat a nice bit of paper and a red pen through the thing.
So do
it. Yeah. But yeah, no, technology, I think if we zoom out, and certainly when people that I've spoke to that are sort of like, you know, playing that big field, when you zoom out of what technology holds, I mean, buildings are going to be looking after themselves.
Oh, it's frightening, but obviously in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And it's not that it's going to make people unemployed. I think that's the big thing that everyone's saying, oh, AI and machine learning is going to put us all out of business. I don't think it has. I've said it so many times before. It's like AI doesn't have a point, you know, whereas we have a point. We can look at these things and have a real view of exactly what's happening, and we can be tactile with it, and we can make some decisions. So I think it's working in, like a co-pilot, working in partnership with AI.
And what we hopefully will have is actually sort of a better record and better understanding of sort of build, particularly heritage buildings, that you're going to have sort of it's going to have a backstory, and that's why I like that we came into this project without sort of any real records. Obviously, sort of, we know we can date when it was, we can date when it was built and various sort of milestones sort of in its history, but ultimately we didn't have like a services drawing and things like that, things that actually sort of now it's just part and parcel of sort of the information.
Because you guys have got a whole team that's now doing this sort of digital transformation.
Yeah, it's such an important part of the business, and obviously sort of Construction Germany, yeah, there is a dedicated sort of workforce.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'd be interested to connect with these guys at some point, just see what they're doing. So if you're king for a day, what's the transformation that you want to bring into the world with what we do, I suppose?
I think it's where it's heading to. I love the idea of the work that you've done here, you know, like sort of integrating that sort of digital side with and actually sort of producing something physical that's right for the setting. I like that, and I like where it's going. I'm just sort of excited in terms of where that's heading, really. Yeah. I mean,
are you sort of upskilling? Are you finding some pressure to go, like, I need to learn about blockchain or?
I think you can never sit still, and I like to think that I upskill, and I think a lot of my growth has been through experience more than anything, and actually sort of learning, sort of taking the best and worst parts of each project and then sort of developing from there. But actually it's getting to that point where we all need to be conscious of upskilling, really. And yeah, so I'm going to have to.
So any further thoughts or transformational ideas that spring to mind from our chat today?
I'm really intrigued in terms of that digital side of things and why you chose the digital element sort of and bringing that into the project here. I think it's unique. It's not something that I've been involved with before, and actually sort of, yeah, so it'd be good to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, to be honest, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it was something that we were already thinking about how are we going to get involved in the transformational piece around O&Ms, and so it started with almost what's the ending goal, and I thought, okay, well, if we're gonna, we'd already started working with a company in Sweden called Winio, and they were saying, okay, well, when you we're on your next job, why don't you think about actually using technology and really embedding it in? And this was sort of almost that first next job. It was a little bit early, but I thought, well, let's throw it in. So we normally would come out and we would just survey the piece, and then everything would be, you know, DWGs and CAD files. But we used a LiDAR and a point cloud, and then a walkthrough. So with that, we could revisit it and measure off it quite accurately. So actually, when we drew it, we could actually then put it in the space. So the designer used the, without even coming to, you know, and this would normally take 5-6 visits of someone coming in, checking it, because of the curvatures, because of the undulations and the height of the screens. So there's because there's 3 screens, 2 were sliding and 2 were...
Because I remember that being quite an easy sort of process, really, like straightforward enough in the
sense. Yeah. Well, when we came to site, it was quite easy, because it had been back tested. So what that gave us and what we wanted to achieve was, once it was designed, is to, with our own fabricators and with our own installers, to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We don't want to spend days there scribing stuff in. We want to be able to go in and fit it and actually work out all the problems, because there was structural problems and the way that it was bolted and welded. And obviously it's covered in a beautiful bronze finish, but you don't want to see all the gubbins behind it. And at the same time, we do want to sort of like really drill into the structure unnecessarily. So we wanted to keep the fabric of the building as intact as possible, so you guys didn't have too much finishing work.
Yes.
So we employed that, and then we went to another layer where we said, okay, well, let's use gaming technology, and we used Unreal Engine to actually put a robot so that he could go in and out of the doors, work out the sensors, so that, you know, when we spoke to the people who were BEA on the sensors and Tormax as well on the equipment, that they could get a flavour of what we were trying to achieve. Because I think there's nothing better than the whole team saying, okay, this is what we want to do. It needs to be a quality finish. It needs to look right first time. And, you know, it's none of this sort of like thinking on site and cutting and carving that often goes on in these sort of bespoke projects. So, and that was working really well. And then after that, we thought, okay, once it's in, that if it ever gets maintained, as someone says, well, what's behind that? You don't have to take it all apart. You've got the drawings, and they're all built into a sort of a nice scan model. So that was the driver for that. And that, you know, all the guys that were involved from our point of view said it was really useful, you know, because it's you're almost getting a 3D pictorial set of drawings by seeing it in action, and there's no miscommunication, no misrepresentation of what you think, you know. Always, even though the guys are skilled, they don't want to be thinking about making on-site decisions that maybe an architect spent, you know, months.
Yes, that's like tweaked by them. Yeah, could actually, so.
Over too much silicon, you know, can really spoil something.
Yeah.
So that's what helped us is, what we got from the technology is actually being able to see it, making it work, and then sharing it and collaborating with the guys even before they got to site. And then when it was installed, you know, when I look at what's finished and when I look at that original model and how, you know, the team were, we have people in Sweden and Holland who were working on this, and our own guys, and how very similar it looks. So, you know, when we share, you know, some of this information, you'll see that, you know, it's very similar. And the little robot gaming thing was part of that. I mean, it looks like it was, but because the robot can actually, that's in the game, you can spin around and look at different angles. There was a few things that it highlighted that we would, like, for instance, the sensor when the doors open. If we hadn't locked the doors, for instance, you would clash.
Yeah.
So it was a risk. So it's picking out things like that. And being able to do stuff after the you know, like you've done the point cloud, so you could reference it now.
Yeah.
I mean, we use other technology. We use Matport. We use OpenSpace. OpenSpace, which we didn't use on this, which is a shame, which is the before and after, so you can roll back time.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah,
see.
I've seen that.
So we've done that. But I mean, at the time, it was quite cutting edge. It allowed us to collaborate off-site. It allowed it to be shared with a lot of the team. And we certainly were doing that a lot more now. So it was just sort of like touchstone for us to do that.
Fantastic.
Mm. Great. Thank you, Craig.
No.
Really good to see you again.
Yeah,
really nice
to
talk about the project.
Yeah,
and look forward to working on the next one.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah.